The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Mark Amtower of Amtower & Company, which is entirely responsible for its content.
This is Amtower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark Amtower. My guest today is a return guest, Carl Dixon, who is the proprietor of... Carl, tell them both your websites, please.
It's captureplanning.com and Prop Library.
And for those who may not have heard you on previous shows, tell them what you do and what each of those websites offer, please.
What I do is publish information that helps people win business, both pre-RFP as well as improving their win rates for their proposals after the RFPs are released.
And you also consult on these matters.
I do. I help people implement the recommendations that I write about and publish about on a weekly basis.
And you do this from the Florida Keys. I'm just throwing that into anchor chain.
I do. So if you hear the surf in the background, it's not my fault.
Yeah, well, sometimes people hear cats when they talk to me, so that's not my fault either. They're just hungry. But that's a perpetual state. So Carl's back today. We're going to talk about two very related but disparate fields. We're going to talk about content marketing, and we're going to talk about RFPs, particularly as they impact the world of GWACs and IDIQs. So one of my favorite slides from a Market Connections study, and you can download it at marketconnectionsinc.com. It's from the 2015 Federal Content Marketing Review, but it's a schematic of the most valuable digital content. And across the top is the stages of a procurement, from identification of a need, allocation of budget, determination of requirements, drafting, writing the RFP, identification of potential contractors, the evaluation process, then the award. And down the side are the types of content that impact each of those stages. And I believe they are ranked in order, first being webinars and case studies, e-newsletters, e-books, other interactive pubs, marketing collateral, which is fifth on the list, infographics, podcasts, and blogs. So we've talked about content several times before, and we talk about what works. Where do people mess it up?
Well, I think the biggest way that people mess up in content marketing is that they try to take the easy road and they send the customer what they've got. So what they've got oftentimes is their marketing collateral. And so they're sending out marketing collateral and saying that they're doing content marketing. Or they might actually put together some material, like a white paper, but it's all based on what they've already written, the material that's easy to access, the low-hanging fruit. And what they're not doing is using content marketing to help the customer buy from them. You don't help the customer buy from you by selling, by sending your marketing collateral. You do it by thinking about all the steps that the customer has to do to issue a procurement and then giving them the information that they need in order to go through their procurement process. So giving them the information that they need to justify the procurement, giving them the information that they need to create the RFP, giving them the information that they need to understand what's essential and important during evaluation. And what that study that you referenced shows is that they're looking for information, and they're taking information from all different sources and all different media. So, the customer needs this information in order to conduct procurements. And if you want to go from basic content marketing, sort of at the individual one-to-one level, here's an article, take a look. That's okay to get your feet wet, but that's really not going to be the most effective content marketing. But if you're anticipating what the customer's needs are and giving them something they can use, then you're really earning the customer's trust and goodwill, and proving that you have insight.
Okay. So in various stages of the process, so from the identification of a particular need, do you think contracting officers are going out looking for the information? Are the end users or the managers, all of the above? What's your gut here?
Each of the different roles that the customer has in issuing a procurement have a different need for information. So the contracting officer is clearly involved, but is looking for particular types of information. The program staff are looking at things very differently, as are the COTARs and the people who are, you know, making the approvals. So you need to look at each of those parties and provide information that's relevant to them. The good thing about content marketing is that in face-to-face marketing, you may only be touching on a couple of the people who are involved, but when you put the content out there, it can make its way to people that you don't even know who are involved based on their role. And so you can actually have a way of putting information in front of people that you can't directly get to. And that's one of the things, anyway, that makes content marketing so powerful.
Well, you know, the personal anecdote, and you probably get this too because you do a fair amount of speaking, but, you know, I do maybe 20 public speaking events a year, and then I do maybe another 20 or so private events, including my own. But everywhere I go, somebody will come up to me after and say, I've been reading your stuff for years, I've seen you several times, and they're just coming up to say thank you. One of the issues with contractors bidding is we don't want to do this because the customer doesn't know us. If you're generating enough content, how does that impact that scenario?
Your content marketing efforts is how the customer gets to know you before they've even met you. My entire business is web-based, and all of my consulting customers contacted me online. So they saw my content. They saw that, hey, I think this person is saying something meaningful to me. And they reached out and made contact with me. I didn't cold call until I found somebody willing to talk to me. They came to me as a result of the content. And even though that specific approach may not work in government contracting because you have to go through the RFP process, the key is that you can establish the foundation of a relationship with somebody that you haven't even met through content marketing.
Okay. Let me ask a slightly different question here. You have one of the more active and not so small groups on LinkedIn, the BD Proposal Management. The name's pretty long now. How many members are on that?
Give or take 34,000.
Yeah. How many do you know personally?
Give or take 2,000 or 3,000.
Right. So you've got a net gain of 31,000 people out there who probably see your name on a regular basis, correct?
On a weekly basis, I probably reach several times that number.
Well, yeah, with your newsletter and others, but I just wanted to touch on that one LinkedIn group. So you are very well known in the proposal BD capture arena, even though a lot of the people who know you, you've never met, you've never seen, you've never spoken with.
It's really...
it's true.
It's just a really positive experience when you do a speaking engagement, and I don't do nearly as many of them as you do, but after the speaking engagement, you have people coming up saying, I feel like I've known you for years, and we're just now meeting.
Yeah, yeah. People walking up and saying, I've been reading your stuff for 20 years, you know. But that's one of the points here. How long have you been producing content to help people through that BD capture proposal process?
About 15 years now.
Okay. So, and you write, I write every day. You write more than me.
happen to be a really fast writer. I'm writing stuff every day.
Yeah. So, but the point here for people out there, you know, you focus on that side. I normally focus on the marketing side, what tactics are working, et cetera. But I've been producing content now since 1991. I've been in business since 85. Took me 6 years to figure out that content was important. Wasn't part of my business then, or seemingly I thought it wasn't, but it is. So with that, we're going to take our first break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. My guest is Carl Dixon. You can find him at captureplanning.com, on LinkedIn, and proplibrary.com. Back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Carl Dixon. Carl, what's the name? You don't really have a company. You have captureplanning.com. You have proplibrary.com, and you're a consultant. But I don't know that I've ever seen a name for a company.
The company is actually captureplanning.com, but because all of my work is web-based, except for the face-to-face consulting. I don't have a traditional office present. I'm about as virtual as you can get.
Okay. Pretty much the same with me. I've been home-based since 1985. My commute is wonderful until I have to come into the radio station, and then I have to drive into D.C. from Columbia, so we won't get into that. Let's talk a little bit about the individual content production versus the company, starting with individual. Again, you and I have produced a lot. What's the value for an individual, and how should they go about it?
As an individual, when you do content marketing, it's about establishing yourself as a subject matter expert, as a thought leader, as somebody that has something worthwhile to say. But it's very much like an extension of personal networking.
Okay. So for individuals out there, is a blog the way to go? Should you start an e-newsletter? Should you post on LinkedIn? Should you write notes, stick them in a bottle, and throw them in the ocean? What's your advice for somebody who needs to start developing that subject matter expert platform?
Focus on the audience and not the media. Because you can build an audience through any one of those channels. You can do it on LinkedIn, you can do it on Twitter, you could do it on Facebook. It doesn't matter so long as the audience that you want to build is receptive to that platform or that media. What matters is that you are building a sustainable audience and that you're not just throwing stuff out there and never accumulating a way to keep in touch with people.
Okay. So don't worry about the media, worry about the message and the audience.
Yeah. I mean, for B2B, B2G kind of stuff, I personally favor email marketing because you actually create an asset through your audience building. You actually have a list and a way to get back to the people in your audience.
Okay. But, you know, building an email list is an incremental process. In the age of immediacy, a lot of people really don't have the patience to do what you've done.
And that's where you have all the other platforms and all the other ways to reach out to people. And it turns out that your customers are on all those platforms. So there's nothing wrong with not building an email list and instead building up Twitter followers. Or, you know, there's nothing wrong with publishing on LinkedIn. You just don't necessarily own that list of followers and in a way where you can get back to people. But that might not really be a key part of your content marketing strategy. So that could be okay.
Well, if you're using them to drive them to a different funnel, so maybe ultimately use the Twitter or the blog to build that email list. But, you know, I guess my point here is patience is needed pretty much on any one of the platforms. You can do a webinar, you still need the traffic. You can do a blog post, you still need the traffic. You write a case study, you've got to get it out to somebody.
Yeah, I don't care how big your personal network is today. If you are just getting started with content marketing, you're just barely reaching a drop in the bucket of the potential of content marketing. It will build every time you publish, your material will get forwarded and reach new people, and your audience will grow as you publish material. And so you'll end up with an audience far larger than you can reach through personal networking. But you're not going to start off there.
Right. And I don't care who you are in the market. You know, every now and again, somebody will come up and say, you know, everybody knows you. Wrong answer. Nobody is known by everybody in this market. I have a fair amount of name recognition because I have the radio show almost 9 years now. I write a monthly column for Wash Tech. I have my blog. I have the whole LinkedIn activity thing going. So I have a variety of things out there that keep me on the radar. I've had sustained visibility, but to say that somebody is known by everybody, you know, same thing for you. You know, in the proposal game, I'm walking through the APMP conference. I spoke there about 3 weeks ago. And, you know, everywhere I mention your name, everybody knows you, but that's a very targeted community. If they didn't know you, they shouldn't be in that market.
Even at an APMP event, when I go to them, I'll be surprised if I already know more than 50% of the crowd.
Okay. But still, that's a pretty decent gene pool. So, and even if you don't know them, the likelihood is that they either know you or they've read something by you.
Yeah, and that's the best part, is that when you meet somebody who only knows you online, then you're taking the relationship to the next level. You're not starting from scratch.
Right. But the point I want to make here for people listening is that only took you 15 years.
Yeah.
So don't be in a hurry, boys and girls. It does not happen overnight. But if you produce good, germane content on a regular basis, you can gain sustained visibility for a very targeted community.
And that's also very much an individualist perspective, as in building your personal audience. And the rules change a little bit when you're trying to go from marketing yourself to marketing your company, especially if it's a government contractor trying to market its capabilities to the federal government. Mm-hmm. Now you've got an organization marketing an organization as opposed to an individual building an audience.
Right.
But the content marketing still is relevant. It just has to be practiced in a much different way, because it's no longer about, you know, proving yourself and proving your knowledge. It's about establishing your company having a capability. And the thing about content marketing is you don't want to oversell. The selling's very indirect. So content marketing for a company is more about establishing that you have a capability as opposed to advertising that you have a capability. And so you need to prove that you know things that are useful to the customer through your content, as opposed to putting out content that claims you've got all these capabilities.
Right. And that may be why case studies, which are older than dirt, is the number two item on that market connection studies, right behind webinars. And if you've been monitoring the market at all for the past decade or so, you'll notice that some of the fastest growing companies in the market leverage webinars tremendously as a marketing tool.
But when you think about it from a corporate perspective, instead of building an audience asset, now you're really focusing on outreach, and reaching out to all of the places where your customers potentially are with many different types of media, and doing that to deliver a message that isn't sales. And so a lot of companies a lot of people struggle with that step from understanding the concepts of individual content marketing into practicing it at a corporate level. They don't know what to do. I mean, do I just put some white papers out on my website? I mean, how do I actually do it? And it requires a much grander vision to position your company in all of the places where your customers are with the right content to establish that trust and prove that you, as a company, are useful, and do all of that either in writing or webinars or any other form of posting, so that when somebody from your company meets somebody from the customer, the customer is saying, "Oh, I know about your company. I've seen the things that you do, and it's very interesting." And now the ground is laid to have a really productive conversation. Then it turns to sales.
Okay. So how important is, let's pick this up on the other side of the break. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'll be back with Carl after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. I'm here with Carl Dixon. You can find Carl at captureplanning.com, proplibrary.com. I suggest you find him on LinkedIn and connect with him, but also subscribe to his the newsletter at captureplanning.com. Excellent tool, chock full of interesting stuff absolutely every week. Let's talk a little bit about where we were going at the end of the last segment. So, you're producing this content. How important is it to narrow your focus, to differentiate yourself, to hone down to a very particular area when you're producing the content?
Think about it from the customer's perspective. The differentiators are what's interesting. The things that you have to say that anybody else could say is far less interesting to the customer than the things you have to say that are special and why those things matter. Those are the things that not just a customer but a reader, okay, that's the thing that they find compelling. So compelling isn't, just having a really good slogan. Okay, compelling is about, being interesting, in a way that engages the customer. So, when they
it's not read, about exceeding customer expectation.
Whatever that means. it's actually a good example because you have to know what the customer's expectations are in order to exceed them. And usually the companies that are making that statement aren't aware of their customers' expectations. If you are aware of your customers' expectations, the way you're going to exceed them, oh my God, it's through a differentiator. Which brings us right back to that thing. So if you really focus your entire content marketing, probably your entire marketing strategy, on your differentiators, that gives you something to talk about that's interesting.
Okay, so I want to bring this back to a slightly different topic. So I'm sitting in the office a week or so ago, and this guy named Carl Dixon shoots me an email, and he says, "I really want to run an idea by you," and My favorite things in the world are reading for business things, reading, writing, thinking, and speaking. And part of that involves cogitating with people like you. So when we got on this call, you outlined this idea of creating a library of things that people could use to respond to in any RFP situation. So a couple of days after that, I'm speaking at the NITAC event, and the biggest issue that a lot of these companies are facing is their ability to do RFQs at a pace that they need to in order to maximize the value of a particular GWAC. And in this case, CIO, SP, SB3, small biz, large biz, and CIO, CS. So, I mean, there's a nice suite of contracts there. And there was like 400 people there. And I laughed when this came up, and I said, it's funny you should mention this because I was just talking to Carl about this the other day. So outline, if you will, your initial remedy for this type of scenario.
There are actually three different scenarios hiding in there. You've got the pre-RFP problem, which if you have a GWAC and you want to maximize your GWAC, you want to be initiating task orders and not simply waiting to respond to the ones that other people have initiated. So your pre-RFP or pre-task order strategy is really key and can be supported by a content development effort. You can actually stage up the material that a customer needs to issue a task order for your kind of services and make it easy for them. So you can target them pre-RFP. Then you have, once the RFP or the task order comes out, you have your response strategies, which can also be supported by having a content library. And so, you know, you're staging your content for pre-RFP, for post-RFP, and then with GWACs, because of the tight turnaround times, you have another content problem, and that's the pace, the speed, the response time, the quick turnaround. Which turns out to be something that can be accelerated through having a smartly planned content library.
Okay, and give me the idea or the components of particularly a smart content library.
If you're targeting pre-RFP, for example, then staging up material that the customer can use to write their statement of work. Staging up the material that customers can use to justify their procurement, to get a task order issued, as well as write the statement of work. Here's an example. I've heard a lot of people complaining a lot about how, well, it seems like these days all the RFPs are just copy and pasted, and they just, like, you know, snap them together and kick them out the door. And, you know, contractors complain about that kind of stuff all day long, but they don't take action or do anything. And so what, you know, I think contractors should be doing in that circumstance is, why don't you queue up some RFPs that you would like them to copy and paste from? And it doesn't even have to be an RFP that you write for them. You can go find a best-in-class RFP that has really, you know, well-written evaluation criteria where L&M are in sync and well-organized, and post that in a place where your customers can get it, in order to say to them, hey, here's a little something we found that somebody else in the government has already put out, preferably in the same agency. And we think this is really good from an industry perspective. Take a look. You know, yeah. So queuing up information like that your customer can use in order to, you know, get the task orders for your services is one content strategy. The other strategy comes after they release the task orders, when you need to be able to respond to them. And a lot of people make mistakes there because they try to have the proposal content already written, when instead what they really need to have are things like their bid strategies. You can actually recycle your bid strategies and your positioning language, the points that you want to make, because the content of the proposal should be customized in order to maximize your chances of winning. So you don't want to recycle the content, but you can create content accelerators so long as you don't recycle the narrative. So there's a lot of tricks to it that you'll learn over time.
Okay, so I know a lot of large companies have content libraries. How? I'll ask this on the other side of this break. I want to know how small companies can get started here. You're listening to AM Tower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. The shows are archived at federalnewsradio.com. Search on AM Tower. When you get there, you'll see a whole bunch of stuff. You can go back and listen to me and Carl 4 or 5 times. Because that's how many shows he's done. We'll be back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark AmTower. My guest is Carl Dixon. You can find Carl at captureplanning.com, proplibrary.com, and you can find him on LinkedIn. So, Carl, we know I mentioned at the end of the last segment, large businesses, people who are used to having, kind of the machine behind them have this content library. How does a small company get started? You know, if we're talking 15, 20 people, let's just say the 2 million to 20 million type company, what do they do?
The big problem is, I mean, do you just put some stuff out on the on your website and hope your customers are going to find it? And if they do, how will you know? So you really need to have a content library set up on a website where you can maybe have some access control so that your competitors aren't using the content that you've created for your customer relationship marketing. So you need to be able to set up a website with those access controls, and you might not even want to do that on your corporate website, and you might not even want to necessarily run that through an IT department. A company of that size may not have an IT department. Mm-hmm. But what you can do is get you can get website hosting that has those kind of controls.
So you do a .gov or .mil access kind of thing?
You can do that. You can also do invitation only. One of the things that I'd like to do would be to host that for companies, since with Prop Library we've got that kind of infrastructure and capability. And being in a position of being able to send invitations out to agencies just to let them know that here's a really useful library of procurement documents, best-in-class RFPs that you can copy and paste from, that sort of thing, then that also can help companies reach out to people and have a bit of a buffer between them and the customer and the information and the documents. It's a prepackaged turnkey hosting kind of approach.
Okay. What about for companies that need to have that content library for their own use when it comes to the RFQ or even RFP process? Because we've discussed this several times before. A lot of what you need on those RFQs or RFPs, you should have your own library of things that you've already done, right?
Yeah. The problem there is that companies a lot of times try to recycle their proposal responses, the narrative and the text, instead of creating content accelerators. Because if your best win rate comes from having a customized proposal, then what you want in your content library are things that help you get there more quickly, as opposed to things that help you get a low win rate proposal produced more quickly. You don't want to just recycle the proposal text. So that's the sort of thing that I write about in my newsletter are what kinds of things can you recycle and what kinds of things shouldn't you recycle and what's the best way to accelerate things.
Okay, so kind of like variations on a theme. You can take this, but rather than reusing it, you reshape it, you retool it to the particular RFP. But what happened? I mean, what if it is on the government side a cut and paste, and you kind of recognize where they've cut and paste from, and maybe you responded to that before?
If the government is very consistent with their RFPs, and if you recognize it, and if their concerns remain the same, and all of the other issues, then you're really lucky because hardly anybody is in that circumstance, and you happen to be in the position where you can probably recycle your content and not have it ruin your win rate.
Okay. So we've got about 4 or 5 minutes to go here. What's your give me your best advice for the less experienced companies that are out there doing this stuff? And let's start with that complaint that I got at the NITAC conference. We didn't respond because that office doesn't know us.
Well, first off, you can use your content marketing in order to get to know them or have them at least aware of you, even though you may not have actually had meetings face-to-face. But the truth is, in the GWAC space, that you may very well be able to be very successful bidding into customers that you've never met before. And I say this because I've actually done this personally. I led the creation of a GWAC response team for a group in a billion-dollar company where they were too big and too slow to be able to adequately respond to their GWAC, so they wanted to create a group just for that. The only problem was they didn't support the group. They didn't understand the GWACs at all. And this was a billion-dollar company. You would think they would, but they didn't. So we had no business development, no pre-RFP marketing, no help whatsoever, and we just started bidding things blind. And we would look at things where we, either within our little group of 4 or 5 people, where we could write the statement of the response of the statement of work ourselves, or where we knew the person who could write it, and we just started bidding those things. And in about 6 months, our win rate was better than the corporate win rate for the big strategic proposals.
I love when that happens.
I mean, people were telling us, "Oh, those GWACs, they're all wired, all of them. You can't possibly win those." And here we were winning more of them than the company was bidding, was winning of its, large strategic pursuits.
And even if you win the large strategic pursuits, the name of the game is winning task order business off of those bigger pieces of business.
Right. So it's not simply a matter of, bidding blind versus not bidding blind and whether one is possible or which is better. It's really about having a smart approach to your GWAC strategy. And, when we set up our group, we were driven to it out of necessity, but we figured out some things along the way. And we figured out how to modify, the proposal process in order to complete it on a GWAC schedule and maximize our win rate. And here's the thing. All of your competitors are struggling with the same issues, same exact problem, same exact turnaround time. Nobody is producing a GWAC task order response on a tight turnaround time easily. They're all struggling with it. So if you do a smarter job in your struggling with your GWAC responses, you can actually have a high win rate.
Cool. That's a great place to wrap up. Carl, thanks for joining me today. Greatly appreciated. Again, you can find Mr. Dixon on LinkedIn. You can find him at CapturePlanning.com. You can find him at PropLibrary.com. Subscribe to his newsletter. This is not my day job. My Government Market Master Continuing Professional Education Program actually has a session coming up on B2G content marketing. So I suggest you reach out to me, drop me a line at marketfederaldirect.net or go to federaldirect.net, get some information, and thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
This is Executive Editor Jason Miller. Follow me on Twitter to get the inside track on IT, management, and contracting news that matters the most to federal executives at JMillerWFED.